I'm Michael Chad Heppner, and I help people speak well when it matters most. I am the founder of a communication firm named GK Training, and in my 15 years leading the firm, I've coached everyone from U.S. presidential candidates to high school students. I help people across that wide range by leveraging the science of embodied cognition to drive behavioral change. I have designed a whole suite of kinesthetic learning exercises that help people overcome chronic communication challenges by relying on their bodies, not just their brains. And I have collected all these exercises and made them available to readers in my new book, Don't Say How to Communicate Effectively to Live a Better Life. Here are five key insights from it. 1. Public speaking is everywhere. I encourage my clients to eradicate the term public speaking from their vocabulary. Whether you're addressing an audience of one or many, you are still communicating, often in public, not in a private whispered exchange. So I invite you to radically expand your conception of what counts as public speaking. Limiting this perspective is self-sabotage, and it can have catastrophic consequences. First, it robs you of countless daily opportunities to practice and refine your communication skills. Second, it perpetuates the harmful belief that public speaking is a rare, avoidable event reserved for so-called naturals. If this resonates with you, it's time to broaden your lens. You're already public speaking constantly, and you will continue to do so throughout your career and life. The good news? Improvement isn't just possible, it's transformative. With the right mindset and effort, you can grow your skills dramatically. 2. Much of what you've heard is wrong. Far too often, people receive advice about speaking that is unhelpful or even counterproductive. It typically falls into three problematic patterns. 1, it triggers thought suppression. Have you ever been told, don't be nervous, don't use your hands too much, or don't rush? If so, you have experienced thought suppression. The human brain is notoriously bad at this. The moment you hear don't, your mind fixates on what you're supposed to avoid, like the classic don't think about a pink elephant instruction. Adam Galinsky, a colleague of mine at Columbia Business School, where I taught for 5 years, studies this phenomenon. When you tell your brain don't, it zeroes in on the very thing you're trying to suppress to distinguish it from everything else. This concept, in fact, inspired the title of my book, Don't Say The title itself is a trick. While readers are drawn to learn how to stop saying the book reveals that the best advice is don't listen to any advice that starts with a don't. 2, it's paired with vague, unactionable suggestions. This dynamic is so common that I've dubbed it the don't general. Here's how it works. After the initial don't, the advice is followed by a totally general suggestion, often signaled by the word just. Examples of these sweeping, unhelpful suggestions are just be yourself, just take your time, just command the room. While these ideas might have good intentions, they lack specificity and practicality. Such advice leaves speakers feeling like failures when they inevitably can't execute something so ambiguous. The truth? It's not the speaker who has failed. The advice has. 3, in the rare cases in which advice is actionable, it is all too often a mental instruction for physical activity. We underestimate how physical the act of speaking truly is. We think of it as a cognitive activity. If I can think of smart stuff, I'll say smart stuff. But it takes more than 100 muscles to do the miraculous act of turning air into sound and sound into words. So if you've heard advice like, take a breath, or speak slowly, and then been unable to execute, you've fallen into this trap. We recognize this in other physical disciplines. No golf pupil would be satisfied with a pro who simply stated instructions but never actually had the amateur golfer practice with a club in their hands. We shouldn't settle for similarly inadequate coaching when it comes to speaking. By understanding these traps, you can stop following advice that holds you back and focus on techniques that truly help you grow as a speaker. 3. Your preparation is probably wrong too. Before building better speaking habits, let's talk about the preparation that comes first, because there's a good chance your current approach isn't serving you. Most people prepare for speaking by writing. They spend excessive time perfecting scripts, outlines, or slides, but far too little time testing those words out loud. This common approach misses the mark for several reasons. Instead, try flipping the script with an exercise I detail in my book called Out Loud Drafting. The concept is simple. Instead of starting with pen and paper or a keyboard, start with your voice. Open your mouth and let words flow out. Here's how it works. 1. Stand up. 2. Ask yourself an open-ended, relevant question out loud. For example, if my audience takes away just one thing from this presentation, what should it be? Or, what is a story or example that illustrates my main point? 3. Answer the question, also out loud. Repeat this process several times. The first version will likely be rough. The second will improve. By the third attempt, you'll notice a refinement in your ideas and delivery. Within minutes, you'll have tested and polished some initial content for your presentation, with 3 major benefits over a writing-first approach. 1, you'll sound more natural. Content developed verbally reflects how people speak, not how they write. 2, you'll reduce anxiety. Out loud drafting fosters a sense of ease and relaxation, replacing perfectionism with spontaneity. 3, you'll begin to internalize your material. Without the rigidity of memorization, you'll already have a sense of what you want to say. Once you've drafted verbally, you can shift to writing, but only to jot down key bullet points for an outline. By starting with your voice, you'll create a more dynamic, engaging, and authentic speaking experience. 4. Rely on your body, not just your brain. Even with better preparation, you still have to deliver in the moment, often while battling old habits that hold you back. How do you break free from ineffective communication patterns and bad advice? What actually works? Over nearly 2 decades of coaching speakers in high-stakes settings, including presidential debates, I've developed a suite of exercises rooted in embodied cognition. These exercises use kinesthetic learning to disrupt unhelpful habits and replace them with new ones. With consistent practice, these new habits become second nature, forming muscle memory that naturally supplants the old patterns. Challenges like speaking too quickly, mumbling, monotone delivery, clasping your hands, or aimlessly wandering the stage are all best addressed through this embodied approach. It's not just about thinking differently, it's about moving differently, even the minor muscle group movements that enable enunciation. One example is a foundational drill I teach in the book that is designed to help speakers master an essential communication skill, pausing. Everyone understands that pauses are crucial. They give speakers a moment to collect their thoughts and allow listeners time to process what's been said. However, the advice typically offered for pausing falls into the same traps I've outlined earlier. Thought suppression. Don't talk so fast. The don't general. Just slow down. Mental instructions for physical actions. Take a breath. None of these approaches are actionable, and they fail to create lasting change. That's why I developed a kinesthetic drill called the GK Training Lego Drill. GK Training, of course, is the name of the firm I founded in 2010. The exercise relies on using Lego blocks, sticky notes, or other objects that can be manipulated. In the book, I even provide readers with an extra page they can rip out and tear into 6 pieces to use for this purpose. But Lego blocks are preferable to paper because interlocking them requires some time and therefore automatically enforces a pause. But any objects will do, provided discipline is maintained. You can try the exercise with these steps. Gather the objects you are going to use. Lego or toy blocks, sticky notes, scraps of paper. Determine some content you can speak about for a few minutes. Then, once you are ready to begin, pick up the first object and share only the first idea of what you want to say. You can consider this like a sentence. As soon as you reach the point where a period or semicolon might appear if your words were being transcribed, you must stack the Lego block, or place down the object, in silence. Then, pick up the second block, or object, maintaining silence. Once you have it aloft, you can speak aloud your second thought. At the end of that thought, in silence, stack the block on the previous. Silently pick up the third block. Once it is aloft, speak aloud the third thought. Continue this exercise, sharing one idea at a time with enforced silence at the end of each, until you have shared the entirety of what you want to say on the given topic. Please note that your topic might warrant more Lego blocks than you have, or whatever objects you're manipulating. That's okay. If you still have more to say by the time you have stacked the last block or object, simply unstack them and continue speaking your content, beginning again with the first block. 5. You're probably afraid of the wrong things. Before they coach with me, many of my clients live in mortal dread of the wrong thing, making a mistake. When we are fully focused on our audience and not ourselves, the very presence of mistakes vanishes entirely. Not because we didn't make mistakes, but because we didn't categorize them as such. We seamlessly, fearlessly, and immediately correct the mistake and continue communicating. The relevant thought experiment here is the following. Imagine giving a lost tourist directions. If the moment after an inaccurate instruction left your mouth you realized it was wrong, you would never spiral into self-consciousness. You would just correct the inaccurate information and get immediately back to the task of helping the confused tourist. The same principle can transform your communication life, even in situations that trigger self-consciousness, like big speeches, presentations, pitches, interviews, meetings, events, and more. Instead of relying on the typical evolutionary threat responses of fight, flight, or freeze, I urge my clients to replace those 3 F's with these: fake it, feature it, or fix it. In the book, I even provide the reader with 2 pages of playing cards that display what I call transparency phrases. These are bits of meta-language that we all use intuitively and often unconsciously when we're focused on our audience. Language like, let me go back a moment, or let me try that again, or put more simply, or oh, I can't believe I forgot, I also want to say. This is why I titled the chapter that contains these cards, Recovering from Mistakes. Notice that the title isn't Avoiding Mistakes. Mistakes are a when, not an if. They are inevitable. And the measure of your performance as a speaker is not if you make a mistake, which you will, but how you recover from it. The final thing I want to share is this, and it's something you may never hear an author say again. I don't care if you read my book. I do care if you read 1 chapter of my book. I wrote it to be like a cookbook or a how-to manual. There are tabs on every single chapter with relevant areas of focus for the reader: enunciation, rate of speech, posture, breath, stance, movement, gestures. Each chapter is intended to help you get better in a given skill. So find the chapter that fits for you, that will help you have, in fact, a better life. Read it and use it. I hope you enjoy the book or the chapter.